Welcome to the Retired Excited Podcast. Retired Excited, the show where we give retired and want to be retired folk a look at how great retired life can be. Here we talk to men and women who are happily retired and loving their life. We explore the techniques, activities, beliefs, and excitement of these happy retirees and examine how every Tom, Dick, and Mary can benefit from their experience. Together, we will delve into what retired happiness really looks like and how anyone can achieve it.
Here is your host, Henry Shapiro.
Hey folks, Henry here at Retired Excited, the show providing inspiration for people who are nearly retired, newly retired, or say they're never going to retire. If you're nearing retirement and fearful of what lies ahead, you don't need to be. If you're already retired and wondering how to fill your days, then this show is exactly for you. Here we talk to retired people doing things that make them happy. Things from stamp collecting to cruising, from dancing to touring the world on a motorbike. There's an exciting stage of life to be enjoyed after full-time work, and it's got nothing to do with your financial situation or social position. We talk to everyday retired people who are living the life they want, and we talk to a few professionals to get expert advice. And I chip in with some of my own experiences. Hey there, everybody. It is Henry at Retired Excited. And here we are with episode number 17. The weeks are slipping by. There are things that go on in this world that one never thinks about. And I'm talking about good things. And we're going to talk about one of those things today. I'm going to talk to a lady whose name is Janella. And her activity is something you won't have thought about. It's what she does is she interviews people who are approaching the end of their life. Maybe they're seriously ill, and maybe they're just getting a bit old and worn out. She's a volunteer for Eastern Palliative Care, which is an organisation that provides services to these people. The people are referred to them by doctors or by nurses, or in fact you can ring them and ask for some help yourself. And Eastern Palliative Care do a whole lot of physical things, like sending a nurse around if you need a few things done, even on a weekly or daily basis, providing that sort of service, but also a service which we're going to call biography, recording the people's lives, and if it works out this way, collating that, writing it down, and turning it into a book, something that they can read back through and at their leisure, something that they can give to their families to keep as a keepsake for them. This is a fascinating interview, really, because, well, for many reasons, but I'm not able to talk about, or more particularly, Janella is not able to talk about specific cases because privacy is absolute. And so she won't talk to you about individual people or activities or that sort of thing. But what I do talk about is the activity itself, how she got into it. And if you wanted to consider doing this, what you would need to think about the logistics of it, how it works, what sort of people become biographers, how you apply for it, and what sort of people are the clients. She calls them clients. They're certainly not patients in her world. They're clients. What sort of people become clients and how they become clients. In the end, and we find this out along the way, it's not necessarily the document which is the purpose of the whole exercise. Now, that might sound a bit contradictory, and I'm not going to say anything any more about that at the moment, only to say that Janella explains it. As we're going along, she explains really what the purpose is. If she finishes up with a document with pictures in it and something, you know, a gorgeous book, well, that's an absolute bonus. But that's not what the exercise really is all about. So I welcome Janella. And, well, let's have Janella tell us the story. Here we go. Today we're going to talk about an interest that you have, which is recording people. It's a bit like being a, I'm not sure if this is the right word, a biographer. Is that
that's
right?
What
do you call yourself?
We call ourselves biographers. We talk to people who are in their ends of life stage through a palliative care organisation. Rather than call it biography, I call it sort of reflections and memories of people who are trying to spend some time getting their lives in order some way,
yes.
Sort of emotionally, I think.
Yes.
And in readiness for dying. They are dying, the people that we talk to, whether it's sooner or later.
Mm.
With some it can be sooner. I've lost clients midway through the process. others that it was a struggle at the end. And
now, I'm going to stop you there because as soon as you start, that whole starburst of questions happens in my brain.
Okay.
I'm going to come back to all that and just go back before you were doing this. Am I right in saying you are a retired person? You stopped full-time employment?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nobody pays me to do anything anymore, so that's my definition.
Bugger.
Yeah.
What were you doing beforehand?
Before I retired, I was working in the ABC shop in the city.
Did you know that you were coming up to retirement? Did you plan it? How did that happen?
No. I went on an overseas trip and I rang up when I returned to get my shifts for the coming weeks and days. And the manager said to me, well, are you sitting down? And I said, oh, well, I can be. And she said, well, we've just been in meetings with the ABC and they're about to close the ABC shop in the city. It was in the GPO building. Many people will know it.
Yes.
Some with fond memories and some not so much.
Others,
depending on. I didn't have to retire at that point, but my option was to be manoeuvred into a different one of the shops in one of the shopping centres.
So from the time you were told until the time you left, was that a long period of time?
We had some months.
Okay.
And we had to pack ourselves up.
Oh, you packed the shop up?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So our last sort of time in the shop was in an empty space covered in boxes, drinking champagne, which is all good fun. I had an idea that I would like to do this biography thing and I'd been putting that off. So.
From what you're saying, it wasn't an upsetting thing for you?
But I think that I would have liked to have kept on doing what I was doing for a bit longer. So it definitely wasn't really on my terms.
What did you think you would be doing after you retired?
Well, I had two friends who were doing biography work. I didn't know whether I would absolutely be able to do that. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody is accepted to do it. But I thought that it was a thing that was going to be a fit for me.
Okay.
So I thought that I probably would do that. And then I sort of had this happy vision of myself in domestic suburban bliss, hanging out the washing, growing the veggies and working in the garden.
Okay, so now you're retired. Let's then move on to what you're doing with the hospice patients. Is that the right way to say it?
It's probably as good a word as any.
Yes. Yeah.
So some of them are in a hospice situation. Many of them are in their own homes. So far, my clients have been in their own home. I've been doing it for 12 months. I've had four clients. I've interviewed them all at home.
There's a whole lot of logistical questions, and they'll just be quick questions. So the first thing is, who actually runs this thing?
The organisation is called Eastern Palliative Care.
Right.
The biography is a very small component of the whole organisation, and I won't say it's very small in its significance, but it's a small part and it's one of the services that's offered to the clients that they have.
So now we've got an organisation and they are already involved with people who are in this situation. How do you become involved, or how does anybody become involved in this?
You would be able to go to their website and follow a trail to volunteers, and you could call one of the coordinators or email and put in an expression of interest. I put in an expression of interest in September. I was then asked to come in for an interview.
If I can just butt in, do they call for expressions or did you just do it?
Well, I called them earlier and they said, download this form, and at this particular appointed time, that's when we want to receive them. So fill it out and send it in to us around about then, and it was a September of the particular year. Then I was asked to come in for an interview.
If they're doing a selection, what sort of criteria are they looking for? What sort of people or criteria, or don't they tell you?
They don't really tell us, but I suspect that they want people who, well, I think there's, if we start with the easy stuff, there's a certain level of technical expertise, there's a certain level of ability to communicate, there's a level of your capacity to be interested and empathetic with your clients. Also then the capacity to sort of follow the organisation's structures and not be a rogue operator. They just want good people who can open their hearts up and go and talk to the people that are in this situation.
And so the process, am I right in saying the process was you went and you had that interview, and then what happened after that?
So then they invited me to join their training program, which is quite specific, unforgiving in its timetable. 8 Wednesdays in a row through February and March, all day.
This is pretty rigorous.
So they didn't want you if you said, well, I could come for February and not March, or I could come for the morning and not the afternoon, because they had a number of people who were prepared to go and do the training. They didn't need people that weren't really able to commit themselves to that.
Now we've got your side of it, and you're trained and you're ready to rock and roll. How do they select, we call them the clients?
The interviewees. They call them clients because we have a professional relationship with them. We're not medical caregivers in that sense, so they're not our patients.
No.
They are a patient of a doctor. We operate with them on a different level. They have clients referred to them through hospitals, doctors, nurses, all sorts of places. You can even ring them yourself if you have a family member or you're unwell yourself.
Am I right in saying that this is quite separate from your doctor and whatever was going on before? This is a whole separate group of professionals to look after you.
But they're on call 24 hours a day, every day, in a situation which is not your ongoing treatment for with your oncologist and your medication, for palliative options,
yes,
which might include physio, some morphine, hygiene issues, all those sorts of things.
Coming back to the biographers, you were working in a bookshop, but were you a writer? What experience do you need to be able to do this?
Okay. I was working in a bookshop. Before that, my past life was as a teacher. So I was an English teacher in a secondary school, helping students make their writing and their efforts as best as they could. I'm not a bad editor in that sense. The way I would relate it to what I do now is that we totally just use the client's voice. We transcribe their own words. But when I talked to one of the biographers who I thought was a very beautiful writer, and also her biographies were beautifully written, I said, how do you work that? And she said, well, I am using their voice, but I give them the best version of their voice that I can. So we are making their voice readable and expressive and interesting, but we are retaining the essence of the person and definitely telling their story in their words, even though we tweak their words.
Yes. So is your experience, teacher, and then working with in the bookshop and so on, is that typical of what the other people had been doing? Do you know what the other interviewers had been doing?
No, I think that everybody came from very different sorts of background.
Yeah. So I can imagine nurses
managers
or
and policy writers. There's some nurses.
Mm. So then let's get on to the clients. What sort of people are they? Is that possible to say? Not really?
No, they are of all ages. My
what
particular
age range?
Clients have been between 50 and 90, definitely younger, definitely down to even children, but that's rarer.
Mm-hmm. And how are they selected? How does the organisation select who they're going to put into this program, let's say?
When they are visited for the first time by their home support worker, they are offered various services, which might be art therapy, music therapy, massage, drivers, helping to get to appointments, those sorts of physical supports that are good when people need that. But also, the home support volunteer, who can be a person who would visit them once a week and just spend time with them, do various things around the house with them, or take them out for a coffee somewhere once a week if that's something that they would like to do, and also biography. The biographer would be described to them as somebody who would just come and record their story for them in whatever way they would like to tell their story, and to make that story into a book of their words, and if they can provide them, their photographs, pictures, etc.
Are the biographers male and female? And
I think there's a predominance of females, as there often are, mm-hmm. in lots of situations where having men involved as well would be a really good idea. So they're really interested in having men.
The organisation says, I'm offering you this service, and the person says yes. As far as the client is concerned, what do they see the purpose of it as?
We have a pretty clear purpose ourselves. I think that you come to a sort of a marriage of understanding what the purpose is. To describe it from our point of view first, it's a therapy. a time that you spend with your client, maybe once a week, where they have the opportunity to reflect on their life, to think about their family, their friends, their work, their background, their values, their hopes and dreams, and whether they've been fulfilled, not fulfilled, whether it's been a life well lived.
Yes.
Or we wouldn't say that's specifically the purpose, but hopefully when they do look back on their life, many of them do think, well, that was a life well lived. I know that I've had two clients, particularly out of my four, who said to me, you know, doing this biography has made me think my story was interesting. My story was worthwhile. I'm really glad I lived my life. And to hear that is just absolute, you know, you think, well, there it is, bingo right there.
Fantastic.
And you sort of think, well, that's almost your last line of your of your biography, and you put that in.
If I can just say, my mother-in-law, who's now 94, maybe 8 years ago, we encouraged her to write it down. So she filled up a number of exercise books. She started, you know, when I was a girl, I went to this school, and did it in excruciating detail. And she lived in Singapore for a good part of her life, and she was there during the Japanese occupation. So she wrote, and she wrote, and she wrote till she got to that, and then it became too emotional for her, and she stopped. So I'm putting this to you. How do your clients feel? Do they get overwhelmed by the...
That can happen, yes. And one time I asked a client a question about life for her after her second husband had died, who'd been very much the love of her life, and I don't think I'm being too specific because I haven't said any names, but she actually misread my question. I meant her day-to-day life, and she started to talk about how hard that had been for her and then said, I actually have to stop today, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely drive the process. We start and we stop on their terms. We try not to really ask too many questions or make too many suggestions. That's really only for when they get a bit stuck and they say, yes, I would like you to help me. I would like you to give me ideas of which way I might take from here or there. You might think that there's a part of that client's life that you think sounds really interesting and you want to probe that and get an interesting story from it. But even that's not the purpose. The purpose is for the client to let their memories come from where they want them to come from.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah. Is it like, are you like a court reporter who is just writing what he said and you're writing like a timeline that they give you, or are you trying to get, may not be the right way to put it, the emotion and the philosophy and the background to what's going on?
We'll probably try and explore those sorts of things if the client is happy for that to be explored. We talk about it in three steps, I suppose, in that the time with the client and the visit that you do and the conversation that you have with the client and allowing them to talk to you is the primarily important aspect of the whole process. Beyond that, if you then get a recorded story, that's good. And if you can then turn that into a book that's a physical thing that you can present to them and that they can then give their families or even just enjoy for themselves, we call that the icing on the cake. But it's not necessary. So if
the purpose
is really the time that's spent with the client and the well-being and the improvement in and the way that makes the client feel stronger, better, happier about their situation, that's what we're trying to deal with.
Yes.
So that's actually quite a learning curve when you go into this program and as a biographer. You go in wanting to make glorious, glossy, coloured, highly illustrated, beautiful books full of incredibly wonderful, wild, fabulous, entertaining stories for a family or anybody to read. And that's great if you get that. But in fact, the time that you spend with a client who says, oh, I've really enjoyed that time spent with you. It's a time that nobody's saying to them, have you taken your medication? Are you breathing better? Are you in pain? Sometimes it's reported by clients themselves or families or people around them that doing the process of the biography does give them pain relief, because it's in the same manner as of that mindfulness whole well-being thing that we're all talking about now for pain management, that we're taking people away from their pain.
Yes.
And not concentrating on them as a cancer sufferer or somebody who's got to go off to more chemotherapy tomorrow. We're allowing them to talk and reflect on what they've done in the past.
A lady I interviewed a little while ago was a Meals on Wheels volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me that when she went in to somebody's house, she might be the only person that person saw all day.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really pleased to see her. And it was another level of security for the person, a bit different to what you're doing. But it's just human contact. And yours is human contact writ large, isn't it, really? Yes.
And it's terribly special, I mean, because we do listen to their story. You feel really like you've got to know that person terribly well.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Do you become, I don't know if it's right to say, emotionally involved with what's going on with the patients, with the clients?
Obviously, there's clients that you become very fond of, and yes. I've really, really enjoyed spending time talking to them and having a bit of a laugh and a chat and hearing their stories. And I know that they are at the end of their life. One of those that I was very fond of has died. I didn't find that incredibly difficult, because when we leave the client as a biographer, we don't have further contact with them anyway. So once you feel that they've come to the end of telling their story, or they're too unwell to go on, or whatever it is that causes the end for that relationship, or they've just told enough and they feel that that's as much as they wanted to tell, we generally work with them for about 8 sessions. We have that disconnect anyway. So they're not a person who's still in our life, even though we have our memory of them and we know that that was somebody who we got to know very well, but now there's no more contact. It's nice to think somebody's still alive in the world that you were fond of,
yes.
But if they're not, that's not something that I've personally struggled with. That's been okay.
I imagine you can think, well, I helped that person a little bit. When you first meet the person, they need to have particular trust in you. Can you talk to me about that? How does that develop?
Yes, well, it's always a little bit nerve-wracking meeting the client for the first time and going into their house and making that start. What I have done is suggested to them that they're beginning, when they start telling their story, that they start with some pretty concrete stuff. And that's worked for me so far. As I've said, I have not had a wide range or a long time doing this. The clients have sort of said, oh, yes, well, that's a good idea, I can start there. So I've often said, you could just talk to me about where your family lived when you were born, what your parents were doing, a bit about them, a little bit about your family situation and how you came to be, and then see where that leads you. And that's a really safe beginning point.
Yes.
It's not like I'm saying, now how about you tell me about, you know, your values and religious beliefs and let's go from there.
What was your relationship with your first husband?
Yes. Or something that would be incredibly difficult and threatening. Mm-hmm. So I've in starting with somewhere concrete, and then I think also giving them that space to talk. One of the things that we're encouraged to do in our training is to spend time not saying much at all. A long silence is okay. Sometimes if you interject into a long silence, you actually stop a train of thought or a feeling that might have led to somewhere, yeah. And then you've spoiled the moment.
This involves a great amount of work for you, it seems to me. Meeting with a person, I'm not sure, how long typically would each session, let's say, last?
Okay. So you would drive out to their home and whatever distance that was, that would be anywhere between 15 minutes to an hour. I haven't had any that have been any longer than half an hour. Then you would spend about an hour with them. During that time, you might record half an hour or 2-45 minutes or so. Okay, if you let it go for a lot longer than that, you've got a hell of a lot of transcribing to do. And one day I had this man who really, really could talk a lot. And it seemed while I was there that it was rude to stop him. And all of a sudden it was after 5 o'clock and I looked at the, and I said, I think I'm going to have to stop you because, you know, they'll be sending out a search party for me. And when I looked at the recording, it had been going for an hour and 20 minutes and that was hours of work transcribing.
Yes.
So about half an hour to 45 minutes is a good amount of time. So there's a little bit of setting up beforehand and, you know, at the end sort of spending a bit of time having a chat. However, I do tend to let the recorder run through a lot of that because it's often that little bit of the chat at the end where you get the few gems of, oh, and I forgot to say, and oh, that reminds me of such and such.
Yes.
And they're beautiful moments. I remember I was on the doorstep with a woman one day and she started to just add, and I was frantically scribbling on the piece of paper as I was sort of trying to get down the drive into the car as she was telling me more and more things. So you're never quite sure when the real moments are going to come that you want to capture. So for a couple of clients, I've started to just press the record button and let it go until I walk out the door, almost till I'm in the car. We are supposed to go through the previous sessions, transcription, read it with them, get changes, corrections, additions, deletions, all that sort of thing. Not every client wants you to do that. Sometimes they see that as a bit of a waste of time and that you could email it to them and they could read it over themselves.
By the time you get there, you set up, you talk to the person, you come home, that might be an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Yes.
Then you come home and transcription, I know it takes a lot of time.
Yes.
So it might be another 2 hours, another 3 hours.
Yes, it could be about 3 hours.
3 hours to transcribe.
I think my session that I let go for the hour and 20 minutes took me about 6 hours to record.
Goodness me.
I mean, to transcribe.
To transcribe,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So that was...
So then the final product of all this is, if it works out this way, you make this up into a book.
Yes.
And what happens to that? Is that public? Is that a public document? Or is...
No. Look, I don't think it is. I don't think it's anywhere in the public domain. It's published by EPC, Eastern Palliative Care. The client gets 2 hard copies and 1 digital copy. And the client then, if they say, oh, but I had so much more to tell you, but you really feel that you've, you know, your sessions with them have come to an end, you can explain to them that they have this digital copy, that they can add to it, that they can take it away and reprint it somewhere like Officeworks or on their home computer. They can add, subtract, change. Other members of the family can use it as a base to do a different sort of biography. So we have a particular brief with them that we work with for that period of time. Some, having said that it's usually about 8 sessions, I had a client who I saw 4 times. We only did 2 recordings out of the 4 sessions and I received the phone call that she died, which was actually terribly sad because she was one of the ones who said to me how much she was really feeling like her life had been worthwhile and that she really liked doing the biography. So I really was feeling good about the whole project and this woman, and she was terribly, terribly nice, a very loving woman, loved her family. And so that was sad.
So the work which you had done up to that date, did that then go to the family or not?
Oh, yes.
Why do you do this?
Well, I certainly don't want to not do something with my time. I think when I went into it, I had a different idea of what it would be.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I think I felt that it was going to be about elderly people and I thought it was about producing the biography. And it definitely isn't about that. What it would be like. I'd spent some time with my mother when she was dying. After she died, I spent a lot of time with my remaining generation up person who was my aunt. And I felt that they really loved having somebody visit them and talk to them about all the great stuff that they'd done. So I knew that it was a lovely thing to spend time with people to do that, and that many people are a little bit abandoned in that way. I really hoped that my 2 experiences being very close family members wasn't going to make it all that different. I thought, does that translate into being able to care about a perfect stranger? So far it's been great, and I have really loved entering into somebody's life like that. I think I have a certain skill set that allows me to do quite a few of the aspects of this, not perfectly by any means, and certainly the technical side I'm working on quite hard. But even the relationship side, you never know that, you never believe that you're actually wonderful at doing this sort of thing. But I think I'm reasonably empathetic. I think I'm a reasonably good listener. I love hearing the stories of the early times of the past. That's not always going to be the case, because some of the clients will be younger and their stories won't be about things going back 50, 60, 70 years. But some of them have been for me, and that's been really entertaining. And then I suppose being a teacher and working with children's writing and on word processing and things like that, I had a modicum of knowledge of how to put that together. And it's always fun to make a book out of something. So that's probably where I felt my skill set was. I've certainly learnt that my skill set is reasonably inadequate and that I need to brush up on it. But that's all good fun as well.
And then finally, would you say to people who are retired or have got the time, would you recommend that they think about this?
I think so, definitely. So, and especially if they come at it with the sorts of things in life that have inspired me to enjoy it and to feel like it's been a worthwhile thing, not only for me but for the people that I'm working with. If that's what they like, then, yeah, definitely it's a great thing to do. And I know that Eastern Palliative Care are very keen to have people go into it. They don't always have the number of clients for the number of volunteers. Sometimes there won't be enough volunteers and sometimes there won't be enough clients. I think it's definitely a very good form of therapy. It's not going to keep somebody alive. That's not what palliative care is. It's about giving people a quality of life at the end of their life and helping them to manage pain, to feel that there's hope and there's peace and there's something to look forward to each week.
A gorgeous place to stop.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time. That's brilliant.
Well, this is certainly not an activity for everyone, is it? I think you need to be a special sort of person, a person like Janella. As she's talking, I think you can feel the empathy, you can feel the love shining through. Her commitment to the people she's talking with, absolutely exceptional. And you will have found out along the way what the real purpose of this is. As I said at the beginning, it's not the production of a shiny book, something much, much more important than that. And she puts it in a fairly straightforward way. She says, this is a therapy for the clients. Well, I think it's more than a therapy. Certainly, as we all grow older, begin to dwell on what's happened during your life. And very often there's no one there to share that with. Your family have heard it or seen it all before, but very often people just want to talk about it. They want to be sure in their minds and for the world to know that they had a purpose here on earth. And that's what comes out in this. It's a therapy. The clients feel stronger, feel better. If they're in pain, this takes them away from their pain, even for just a short while. And that's a great, great thing. As we talked about, it's quite a lot of work for the person who is the biographer. And so those people who take it on have got to recognise that and be prepared to put in those hours. But I think the payoff in what you receive yourself as the biographer, the wisdom, the understanding, more than repays the effort that you've put in. As I said at the beginning, I bet you didn't even know that this was going on. It's one of those activities that motors along. And what we didn't, I don't think that we talked about this during the session, the number of people who were being trained. At the training exercise that Janella went to, there was 40 to 50 people there. Some have went on to be biographers and others went on to do different sorts of services. And so this is quite a big exercise. It's not just two or three people. And as she said, sometimes there's more biographers than clients and sometimes it's the other way around. Do you think you could do this? Do you think you'd be interested in doing this? You need some sort of talents, I suppose. You need to be able to talk to people. You need to have some technical expertise to be able to operate a computer and type. So if I come back to purpose, it's not just purpose for the clients, but I think the people who, such as Janella, who are being involved in this, it's giving them a purpose as well. If you thought, okay, I'd love to have a go at this, whether it's with Eastern Palliative Care, or I'm sure there'll be a service in your city or your suburb or somewhere nearby to the country, in the country or suburb where you live. If you Googled it, it'd all be there. I'd be really pleased if you'd leave me a comment in the reply section on the website, retiredexcited.com, and find your way to episode 17. And tell me what you think about this activity. Tell me how you would feel about being a biographer. Tell me how the clients would feel about it, how you would feel about it, and whether you'd like to do it. If you want to contact me directly, as always, henry@retiredexcited.com. I'm always happy to hear from you, and I will reply to your emails. Might be the next day because we might not be in the same time zone, but I will reply to your emails absolutely. So that's it for today. I'm looking forward to next week. We've got a great guest on next week. Keep well, keep healthy, keep happy. I'll see you next week. Bye now.
I like that. I'm going to give that a go for sure.
Ian, that was terrific.
That was interesting. What a good idea.